Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this last day of August, the 31st. Monday at 9, all things political, and we're happy to have as our guest this hour an old acquaintance from, well, a new acquaintance, but he will become an old acquaintance on this show. From the remote broadcast we did in Appleton, he was our guest for one of the hours, and we thoroughly enjoyed him, and I think you did too. Professor George Waller will be joining us again this hour, Assistant Professor of Political Science at the University of Wisconsin, Fox Valley. We will be spending the second hour of our show talking about the life of Senator Ted Kennedy, but of course it dominated much of the news coverage, very moving coverage over the course of the weekend. So we will talk about that and filling the seat of Senator Ted Kennedy, if Vicky Kennedy might be the person who people want from Massachusetts. We'll be looking at health care this hour. Senate Democrats, are they planning to push through a health care reform using parliamentary procedures that would allow a simple majority to prevail rather than the 60 votes needed to overcome a filibuster? And they don't have the 60 votes. So is that the way to go? Or is this an indication that it's not time for major health care reform and just a little bit will be okay? I mentioned a few moments ago an anti-war movement is preparing a nationwide campaign to challenge the administration's policies on Afghanistan. We'll be talking about that and whatever else you'd like to bring up this hour. As always, the phones are open for you. 800-486-8655 is our number. 800-486-8655. And the email address, if you'd like to send an email, is talk@wpr.org. Professor George Waller, Assistant Professor at the University of Wisconsin, Fox Valley, thank you again for joining us. Hi.
Hello, Kathleen.
Hi.
It's a pleasure to be with you.
Yeah, well, we had a great time with you in Appleton, and we're happy to have you on the air again. Did you have a chance to see much of the coverage of the Kennedy Mass and Memorial?
Yes, I did. It was, as you said, quite moving coverage, particularly, I thought, his son's eulogy to his father with the assembled dignitaries there.
Yes, wasn't it? Well, you know, one of the sons we just haven't heard very much about, and he just seems to have a gift for the genuine and a truly warm person, and that's Ted Kennedy Jr. Where has he been all these years?
Yeah, well, you know, a long time ago, as he mentioned in his eulogy, he had suffered cancer and had to have a leg removed, and I can remember actually seeing him, a very moving picture of he and his father, Senator Ted Kennedy, where Ted Kennedy was sort of teaching him or reminding him how to walk with his prosthetic leg. So he's not really been in the political limelight. He's taken a kind of low-key approach, but clearly his eulogy the other day was really quite moving.
And do you think, people say as a result of one speech, as was true perhaps of President Obama, people, Mario Cuomo, another I think of, if you give a stirring speech and so many people see it, do you think this may be the beginning of his life in the political limelight?
Well, it might be. You know, a eulogy is one thing. Major policy speeches and taking positions on political issues is something else altogether. I think right now, as we look to see who will eventually replace Senator Kennedy, I think there are a number of names that have been floated as possibilities. I don't know whether Ted Kennedy Jr. has put his name into that ring. But I'm certain we'll see how that'll play out. I think January is the time scheduled for the special election in the state of Massachusetts to fill that seat.
Mm-hmm. Both Senator Hatch and Senator Dodd said the person to fill it, at least temporarily, is Vicky.
Yes. Massachusetts is interesting because unlike most of the states where the governor would appoint someone to fill the interim before the next senatorial election, Massachusetts calls for, by law, a special election to fill that seat. There was some discussion prior to Ted Kennedy's death about the possibility of enacting a law quickly through the Massachusetts legislature, which would have allowed the governor to appoint his replacement. That really didn't go anywhere and probably was pie in the sky politically, but we'll just have to wait and see what's going to play out in the state of Massachusetts as to who's going to fill that seat.
Professor Waller, who is the liberal lion of the Senate now? Is there one?
Boy, you know, it's hard to imagine who could replace Senator Kennedy in that role. I think in many respects, you would find that a lot of people say that one of the most liberal senators in the Senate currently is our own Senator Russ Feingold.
Yes.
I don't know that he would step into the shoes of Ted Kennedy. There's some talk that John Kerry is actually beginning to fill that role somewhat, particularly in terms of Ted Kennedy's efforts to reach across the aisle and try to forge some bipartisan kinds of compromises, at least to work with the other side. But nobody's going to be able to replace Ted Kennedy in anytime soon.
John Kerry certainly gave a very moving tribute to Senator Kennedy. I was thinking as I was watching him, we needed more of that during the campaign to have a better feeling of who he was. He was very stiff during, I think, his presidential run, and he was quite tender during his eulogy.
Yes, I agree with you. I think a lot of people who were in the Kerry camp in 2004, after the election, did a lot of headbanging as to the kinds of mistakes that were made by that campaign.
Right. Healthcare. Let's talk about that, the signature issue of Senator Kennedy's long career in the Senate. And there is talk now, and I'm wondering if you think this will be the way they'll go, if they should go this way, or if it's just time to drop healthcare, that the Senate Democrats are preparing to change push through the parliamentary procedures that will allow this simple majority to prevail rather than the 60 votes needed, which I don't think they have,
right,
to overcome a filibuster. Is that a wise political move?
Well, I'll tell you, I don't think the Democrats can afford to have health care completely fall apart.
Mm.
I think many in the Congress of the United States recognize that if it were to do so, it would not only negatively impact President Obama's ratings, but also their own political fortunes as well. So I think there's a number of scenarios that are sort of being tossed around, and one in particular that's gaining some credibility is the idea that the House is going to pass a health insurance reform bill that includes the public option. The Senate will pass one that doesn't have a public option. And at that point, the bills are going to go to a conference committee where they'll have to hammer out the differences. That conference committee would be made up of members from both of the chambers. And there's some interesting sorts of things to think about here, because currently, if the leaders of that conference committee were Max Baucus of the Senate Finance Committee and Henry Waxman, who leads the House Committee on Health Care, things could get really messy in that conference because the two don't see eye to eye at all. And then one option that's being considered is the idea of actually separating the bill into two parts, whatever comes out of that conference committee. Bill one would be something that would contain the things that all Senate Democrats agree on, such as prohibiting insurance companies from discriminating against people with pre-existing conditions, would include a ban on annual and lifetime caps on reimbursement, and an individual mandate to buy health insurance. That bill would probably get the 60 votes necessary to pass or to invoke cloture and pass via the normal procedure. Even some Republicans might vote for that. Bill 2, which would be the split that would come out of the conference committee, would contain the controversial stuff, and that would be the public option and the financing. And that might be something that would the Democrats would use the reconciliation process for, where they would hammer it through with the 50 votes and Vice President Joe Biden's vote to pass it. That would probably incense Republicans, but Republicans did the same thing when President George W. Bush passed his tax reform measures or his tax cut measures. So we'll have to wait and see what's going to actually play out here once these bills get to the conference committee between the Senate and the House.
And what is the minimum that the Democrats need to keep them from having to suffer political consequences?
I think they've got to pass a bill that includes, at least if not a public option, at least the idea of some health insurance cooperatives. The public option, I think, has really been just sort of hammered in the court of public opinion. And I don't know whether the public option will be part of the final bill, although there is now a resurgence of an effort on the part of those who are in favor of the public option to include it. But they've certainly got to do something about the pre-existing conditions. They've got to do something about a mandate that all people have health insurance if they have any hope at all of containing health insurance costs. So they've got to do at least those two things, I think, in order to save face on this reform.
Mm-hmm. And what about the president on this? It seems to me as though he's not been as forceful and as clear as perhaps he should be. Why doesn't he just come out and say public option is very important to him, or public option is something that's negotiable? Why doesn't he lead this effort instead of having it work its way through Congress?
Yeah, you know, I agree with you on that, Kathleen. I think he's... You know, President Obama has been one who has been very sort of adamant about the idea of trying to work in a bipartisan fashion, and I think it's been clear to this point that the Republicans, let's face it, don't really have any incentive to work bipartisan fashion at all in this regard. And I think Obama is starting to recognize that now's the time to sort of get down to brass tacks and start pushing this through, which is why I think this reconciliation idea is now gaining some credibility. But I agree. I think he should have been much more forthright and forceful in telling the public exactly what he was in support of, and in fact in defining what these things are.
Yes.
I think because of his lack of that, it allows the opposition to define certain aspects of the program, which I think have been disingenuous and oftentimes completely misconstruing the facts.
Let's go to phone calls, 800-486-8655. Professor George Waller, Assistant Professor of Political Science at the University of Wisconsin, Fox Valley, is our guest. We start our calls with Dave from Menominee, Michigan. Hi, Dave.
Hi, good morning.
Hi.
Hey, you know, Dick Cheney is out again, and he is telling us about how much danger we're in and, you know, how dangerous the Obama administration is placing our country, and now he's been doing this since he's been out of office. He also has said, knowing what we know now, that there were no threats, he would still send in our military and have our men and women die, even though he knew now that, you know, none of that was true. He also just said this weekend about the torture, even though he knows we broke the law, he would do it again. And now this guy is coming around, scaring up, stirring up the fear. And our country right now is in a perfect position to have something blow up. Now, what really scares me is this guy, what kind of contacts does he still have with CIA contractors? Does he still have the ability to be in touch with these people, to do some kind of clandestine operation, to do the I told you so?
Woo, Professor Waller, what do you think?
Well, first of all, I would comment on the sort of fear-mongering that's become part of the public rhetoric since the 9/11, and I think, you know, fear and exploiting fear is a tactic that works politically. I think you see that even in the context of the healthcare debate, some of the public forums that have been held by lawmakers where people get up and scream at them out of fear that this is going to happen and that's going to happen. And I think there's a kind of exploitation of that fear that has credibility in some circles, and at least has political credibility in some circles. Dick Cheney, I think, is someone who clearly feels the way he feels about the dangers of international terrorism. And I think he also finds himself in a kind of a tough political spot in that, you know, I think people are beginning to recognize that some of the things that were done in ways that were pushed by Dick Cheney that probably didn't have the kind of legitimacy that he would have hoped. So in some sense, I think Dick Cheney is out there in order to try and rescue his name and rescue some sort of a legacy. In terms of an ability to contact members of the CIA and finagle some sort of disaster, I think that's probably not the case. I think there are ample checks and balances to ensure that that could not happen. I'm certain that people are on top of that kind of an idea, and it would certainly be something that would be a treasonous kind of activity. And I don't think Dick Cheney intends to engage in sort of a treasonous activity.
Professor Waller, why do you think he has become the visible and vocal voice of opposition? He was already the vice president. Is it a statement that the Republicans don't have their act together, or what is it? It's unusual.
Well, it is unusual, and what's particularly unusual is that George W. Bush has remained essentially silent since President Obama has been in office, and it's very unusual to have a former vice president come out so forcefully against the current administration. I don't know what that reveals about the relationship of Dick Cheney and George W. Bush within that administration, but it is an unusual kind of thing. I'm not sure that Dick Cheney represents leadership in the Republican Party any more than perhaps Rush Limbaugh does, or I think the problem is the Republicans don't have any visible leadership at this point. And the only voices we're hearing are the voices of Dick Cheney and Rush Limbaugh and Sarah Palin from time to time. And I'm not sure that kind of a Republican Party is going to be a viable party on down the line. Mm-hmm. I think they're in a real struggle to identify who they are.
Thanks, Dave, for the call. John from Milwaukee. Hi.
Well, Kathleen, you missed a wonderful wake on Friday in Boston. That's all I have to say. The logistics of that wake, for those of us that stood in line at the Kennedy Museum, every 300-400 feet, you had the toilets. They passed out water. The twins, Joe Kennedy's twins, everybody, Kathleen Kennedy Townsend was shaking hands. They had all the grandchildren and nieces out there. Just a wonderful day. They didn't have any holy cards, though, so we're going to have to make our own, I guess.
You went all the way to Boston for the wake, John.
Flew out Friday morning, flew back Friday night. We were the last plane out. They landed Air Force One at Logan, so that took an hour of time to clear the airport, and they had the after effects of the hurricane. So we were the last plane back to Milwaukee here. But I want to say what a wonderful sight it was to see Joan at both the Kennedy Museum and the Mass, and then down at Washington. Cameras caught her talking to Joe Biden and Obama at Our Lady of Perpetual Help Church, and it was just a remarkable day. I want to just insert, you were talking about successors to Ted Kennedy. I don't think Feingold is capable of it at all. But we have a man just south of us, Dick Durbin from Illinois, that I think is ready, willing, and able to take up the mantle.
I think you may be right about that. Why did you go to all the expense, and it wasn't easy to go to Boston for all of this? Why did you do that, John?
Well, he owed me $21.23 from 1980 up in Appleton. I told you about that.
Yeah, tell us that story. Tell us again.
Well, we were going out to breakfast. We were campaigning up there. This was in the late winter of 1980, and if you knew Ted Kennedy, he never carried any money. And we went to breakfast, and came time to pay the bill, and nobody had any money except me. So I paid the bill quite willingly. It's just one of those things, but I, as a member of the working class and what he did for us in 1980, Douglas Frazier coming to him in 1979 on bended knee and asking him to run for president, it was the least I could do to say goodbye to this wonderful, wonderful man.
Thank you for your call, John. That's quite a story, Professor Waller.
Yeah, you know, Dick Durbin is an interesting sort of choice here. You know, he's certainly got the bombast. He's certainly got the sort of style. I'm not sure whether he has the kind of name recognition that automatically comes with a Ted Kennedy. But you know, we'll have to see who's going to rise to take that place. I just think it's awfully tough shoes to fill. That's a great story, by the way, about Ted Kennedy. And I would say this, too, about the logistics of what we witnessed in terms of the wake and the funeral. You know, it's sad but true. The Kennedy family knows how to do this. I mean, their history is one where they've had those kinds of tragedies, and it clearly it was done with extreme taste and just a very moving kind of event.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, John, so much for your call. Our number is 800-486-8655. The email address, if you'd like to use that method of communication, is talk@WPR.org. And our guest is Professor George Waller, Assistant Professor of Political Science at the University of Wisconsin, Fox Valley. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. The second hour of our program today, we will be talking about the life of Senator Ted Kennedy. We decided to wait until today, figuring that many of you would have had a chance to reflect on his life and to watch the memorial service on Friday and the Mass on Saturday. So that's the second hour of our program. We'll have two guests with us, Jenna Russell, journalist for the Boston Globe, contributor to what I think has been the definitive book on Ted Kennedy, Last Lion, The Fall and Rise of Ted Kennedy, which was compiled by writers for the Boston Globe who've covered the Kennedys, obviously, for a long, long time. And Michael O'Brien will be joining us, Emeritus Professor of History, University of Wisconsin, Fox Valley, who's written, and we interviewed him when this came out, a biography of John F. Kennedy. And, of course, that takes in the whole family as well. So that's our number two, 800-486-8655 for all things political. Jim from Milwaukee, hello.
Yes, hi. I have two homework assignments for progressive Democrats that I'd like to talk about. And the first is to read the August 31st issue of The Nation magazine and read the article, The Case for Busting the Filibuster, by Thomas D. Hogan, I guess is the way you pronounce it. I'm not sure. And then contact the President and Congress and say that, you know, we have to break through this this old outmoded way of using the filibuster to get the public option passed and have a strong health bill passed. And the second homework assignment for progressive Democrats would be to contact the Democratic National Committee and tell them that we're not going to contribute unless we have a real progressive running the campaign committees for the Congress and for the Senate. Joe Connison in the Shepherd Express this last week has had an article out about how Rahm Emanuel poured money into primaries for Blue Dog Democrats, and of course we're suffering the consequences of that now in the health care legislation.
Professor Waller.
Well, yeah, I think it's true that Rahm Emanuel did, in fact, put money into those Blue Dog Democrat races, and I think it was because it was in an effort to really expand the majority of Democrats in the House. I do agree with you that there was it has caused some consternation among progressive Democrats in terms of getting the kinds of things in the health care package that progressive Democrats want. I think what's going to have to play out here in terms of the viability for all Democrats in the House and Senate is to make sure that something comes out of this. I do also believe that, as I said earlier, Democrats are going to have to circle the wagons and come out with something here and not let this fail, because I don't think it would be to the benefit of any of them, whether they're Blue Dog Democrats or progressive Democrats, to let that happen.
Thank you, Jim, very much for the call. Let's talk about Afghanistan for a moment before we go back to phone calls. The anti-war movement preparing a campaign this fall in October, I believe, to challenge the administration's policies on Afghanistan. We haven't heard too many calls for withdrawal, but we're starting to hear more and more. And I'm wondering whether or not you think that it's time for us to come up with a plan, a withdrawal plan. And secondly, if Afghanistan could, as one of these leaders of the movement suggested, be a devastating albatross around the president's neck.
Well, that's very interesting, because even our own Melvin Laird from here in Wisconsin this past weekend came out saying that he thinks Afghanistan is sort of a pathway to Vietnam. You may remember Melvin Laird is one who sort of worked with the Nixon White House to engineer and the Ford White House to engineer our withdrawal from Vietnam. So even on the right, we have expressions of concern about the degree to which we are being embroiled in a quagmire in Afghanistan. And of course, most recently with the elections in Afghanistan and the reports of widespread fraud that seem to be doubling by the day, there are real, real concerns, I think, across the political spectrum about what to do with Afghanistan and whether it is savable at this point.
Mm-hmm. What do you think?
Boy, you know, I'm really concerned about Afghanistan. I think, you know, history has shown that those who have gone into Afghanistan and tried to wage a war and to try and sort of impose some degree of order on that region have been subject to dismal failure. I mean, as recently as the Soviet invasion of Afghanistan and their forced withdrawal in a sort of shameful defeat. So I'm not sure we want to go down that line, but I'm very troubled by what's happening in Afghanistan and very concerned that it could become an albatross around Obama's neck.
Hmm. Larry from Milwaukee, hi.
Good morning, Kathleen and Dr. Wallen. I wanted to comment on the, all of the commentary. I really agree with Dr. Waller on all kinds of issues there. But one of the things I think that is critical in supporting our president is to recognize the high level of discipline that he has, and that it is that discipline that I attribute his reluctance, his perhaps strategic decision not to weigh in firmly on the sick pay option or even any other aspect of the health care reform. I think it's that discipline that has postponed the process long enough that the Democrats now have a legitimate opportunity that the public will perceive their choice to use reconciliation as a legitimate tool against a Republican refusal to cooperate in any way.
I think that's very interesting because I do believe that the public is coming, with the exception, of course, of that hardcore element on the right, the public is coming to the perception that Republicans are not going to play ball here and that if anything is going to happen, it has to be done by the Democrats, by the majority Democrats. And that's why I say that I think Democrats are realizing that it is, in fact, their ball game and they've got to deliver something. And you may be exactly right that this is a strategic move by the President of the United States to create that public perception that, or the public reality, if you will, that Republicans refuse to play on this and it will be, in effect, his victory if something eventually comes out of this.
And yet, hasn't he allowed the debate to take this horrendous turn? So you've got people carrying guns to meetings and people going crazy at town hall instead of having people have different opinions of course, invalid opinions about why health care should be reformed or what should be part of a bill. But instead, I don't know if it's the news fault or the Obama administration not grabbing hold of this issue, but all we've been seeing are people yelling.
It's very interesting because we saw this during the campaign as well. We saw some of this in the Republican rallies. I mean, even in that incident in Minnesota where John McCain had to actually correct that woman when she was, making all kinds of outrageous claims. And I'm not sure that what people are seeing on the part of those people who disrupt these meetings is playing well for Republicans or playing well for the opposition to health care.
Oh, that's interesting.
I think you see a lot of people who are saying, you know, there's just some kooks out there, and we've got to really rescue this. Because a lot of the stuff that's being said is just purely misinformation and disinformation, and much of it just outright lies.
Thanks, Larry, very much for your call. Ed from Wausau, hi.
Hi. Right before Congress went away for their August break, it was on it's Thursday or Friday, but Representative Conyers, who was head of one of the committees in the House, was scheduled for a Meet the Press meeting. None of what he said appeared on any news program or anything, but essentially when he, during the question period, he was wringing his hands, and essentially the press conference was coming to a quick close because he had to go back for a vote. And in answer to a question as to what was the problem, why wasn't single payer being considered? Why were the Democrats stumbling over each other with all the committees and everything? And Conyers, in one very brief statement, mentioned that Rahm Emanuel was the problem. That's my only comment.
I don't know the press conference that's being referred to here, and I wish, like the caller, I wish that we would have gotten more from John Conyers as to just exactly what he meant by that.
Yeah. Thanks very much, Ed, for your call. We have a couple lines open now if you've been trying to get through. 800-486-8655 is the number. Professor George Waller, Assistant Professor of Political Science at the University of Wisconsin, Fox Valley, is our guest, and it is All Things Political for this Monday, the 31st of August. Saeed from Green Bay, hi.
Yes. Thank you very much for taking my call this morning. I think ascribing ill intent to where there are very legitimate policy differences to the opposition, ascribing ill intent to the opposition, does not foster great public exchange and public debate. And on both healthcare and the discussion of the CIA, this has been happening, not just on this show, but all over. Let me give you an example. There is a legitimate policy question with regard to the CIA investigation. If you Google Ahmad Vahidi, V-A-H-I-D-I, the man who was just appointed to Minister of Defense in Iran by Ahmadinejad, it will give you pause for demoralizing the CIA at this time. This man is on the Interpol's top 10 list. He is he's the head of a special operations unit that has conducted multiple international terrorist events, and he is now appointed to the Minister of Defense in Iran. So this is a time we should not undermine or demoralize the CIA. This is a legitimate policy difference, and some discussion, some honest exchange and discussion needs to happen in our society to decide how do we rank the human rights of Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, who engineered the death of 3,000 Americans, versus the legitimate security needs of this country. That is a legitimate debate. There are two sides to that. Now, to go and say that, to even entertain the thought that Cheney might engineer a terrorist event in the United States to further his point is simply ludicrous. Now, let's get to the healthcare debate. In the healthcare debate, there is no debate because these town hall meetings that have been happening some of the anger you see, and I don't support any uncivil behavior, but some of the anger you see is because people are not being allowed legitimate expression. Let me give you an example. In UWGB in Green Bay, there was a healthcare forum. Police prevented people with opposition signs to come in. They took their signs away in a clear violation of First Amendment rights. I have personally attended several Congressman Kagan's town hall meetings, and I am a physician in Green Bay, and he knows me. He knows that my questions are not trivial. He has refused to take any input from me or any other physician in the crowd that might ask a question. We're holding a forum in Green Bay tomorrow night, the Brown County Medical Society. We have invited Congressman Kagan to come and participate in a very civil exchange and debate on the very significant issues that face us in healthcare reform. He refuses to come because he is avoiding a legitimate exchange. So let's not write the obituary of the Republican Party prematurely, and let's not ascribe ill intent to opposition. This country is founded on a civil public disagreement on issues of significance, and the Democrats trying to push this healthcare reform through the Congress in record time by means other than the normal process, and in time that is shorter than it took Obama to pick his family dog, is just not the way to go, and there will be backlash from this.
Professor Waller.
Well, I would say this. I certainly agree with you, as I said to the caller, that any idea that Dick Cheney would try to engineer some sort of an attack
right.
Was ludicrous. And I would say this about the CIA matter. I agree that there are legitimate issues here. I think it's also legitimate to talk about some of the things that the CIA may have been engaged in our operations in Iraq that really do have some real important sort of constitutional questions that need to be investigated. We really do need to have some sort of a discussion on where is the appropriate balance between the rights of civil liberties and constitutional procedures and security. So I welcome a legitimate debate on that. What I don't like is the kind of exploitation of fear that is part of the rhetoric of what's been said. I mean, when Dick Cheney says that he thinks the Obama administration is leading the country down a dangerous path, that seems to me not to be a kind of civil debate, but designed to specifically to sort of inflame the rhetoric of fear. As far as the health care issues go, I would welcome, as you, I think, the caller definitely would, a reasoned civil debate on both sides. But the problem is that isn't what has been occurring. What has been occurring in these things is that these meetings have been sort of hijacked by those who refuse to let anyone speak and making sort of outrageous claims about provisions of the health care bills. It would be nice if all sides could calm down the emotions and have a sort of reasoned debate. But I think what's happened is that there's been an element that has decided they don't want reasoned debate and discussion. They want to disrupt, and they want to be just purely in opposition. And I think that's part of our problem.
And we plan to have, just to give ourselves a little bit of promotion here, which we don't do very often, one of those reasoned debates on September 16. We're doing a full two-hour live audience forum with people who have different perspectives on healthcare reform at the Frater Cancer Center, the new center, and we will have exactly what we've been calling for on that day. Thank you, Saeed, for your call. More phone calls in a moment. It's All Things Political for this Monday, the 31st of August, with our guest, Professor George Waller, Assistant Professor of Political Science at the University of Wisconsin, Fox Valley. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Following the news from National Public Radio, we will be talking about the life of Senator Edward Kennedy. I'm sure many of you had a chance to see the mass that was held and the burial and the appearance before Senate staffers and heard some of the eulogies that were delivered on at the wake on Friday evening. We'll be talking about his many years in the Senate, his accomplishments, his tragedies, his personal limitations. We'll have two guests with us the second hour of our program. Jenna Russell, journalist for the Boston Globe, contributor to The Last Lion, The Fall and Rise of Ted Kennedy, and Michael O'Brien, emeritus professor of history from the University of Wisconsin, Fox Valley. So we welcome your reminiscences the second hour of our program today. Back to phone calls. We go next to Alicia from Appleton. Hi, Alicia.
Hello.
Hello.
First off, I'd like to say thank you to Professor Waller for being such a great poli-sci professor over there at Fox. I was recently one of his students last year.
Oh, great.
And I also wanted to talk about the new Montgomery GI Bill, which has been named the post-9/11 GI Bill, as well as the Wisconsin GI Bill.
Okay.
I recently got a letter in the mail from the UW colleges saying that starting this spring semester, I will have to apply for the post-9/11 GI Bill, which is, I think, is a very good thing for many other veterans in different states. But I think it's kind of a bad thing for Wisconsin veterans because the way it works is Wisconsin veterans get the get their tuition paid by the state of Wisconsin through the Wisconsin GI Bill, and then we receive a check for the Montgomery GI Bill for $1,321 a month. Now, the way it's going to work is we're going to have to apply for the post 9/11 GI Bill, and if we qualify, we won't receive the Wisconsin GI Bill like we have been, and the payments that we will be getting from the post 9/11 GI Bill will be smaller than the what we were getting before from the Montgomery GI Bill. And they're saying that there might be supplementary payments, but they don't know. So I'm kind of concerned about it. I don't know if you have any opinions on that, Professor Waller.
Well, I'm not really familiar with it. By the way, hi, Alicia. glad to hear from you. But no, I'm not really familiar with the workings of the Wisconsin GI Bill nor the post 9/11 Montgomery GI Bill. It seems odd, though, that there would be a reduction in the amounts you receive. And I would have to do a whole lot more research on that before I could comment intelligently about it.
And would you recommend that she goes to her member of Congress, or?
I think that would be a great place to start. I know there's lots of information about legislation that's on the government websites, House.gov or Senate.gov. But one of the things that would be a really good thing to do would be to contact your representative and get some clearer explanation on that.
Right. Thank you, Alicia, very much for the call. We go to Tim from Sparta next. Hi, Tim.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Yeah, I just wanted to call. I disagree with the professor when he says that these town hall meetings are being hijacked. It's kind of funny to me when, you get these, it's a typical college professor from the state university that's saying, we'll preach on inclusion and diversity and things like that. And when you come in, and whether you come into a state university, because I have been there, and being a conservative, it's not easy, and you have an opposing point of view, and you stand up and you stand for what you believe in, that you're labeled, an extremist, or you're labeled, that you're trying to take over just because you have a dissenting view. You know what? People are upset about this bill. There's so many things that, I can't go into because I have limited amount of time, that people don't like about this bill. And you know what? Good for them that these people, especially when I see these older people, they're saying, time out. Have you even read the bill? You know, we have people in Congress, in the Senate, that don't even read these bills. And it's over 1,000 pages long. And you know what? Another thing is they're not writing these bills. They're having other people from, the MoveOn.orgs and stuff that are writing these bills. And you know what? Time out. Let's see what's in them. Let's talk about it and debate it. And let's not label the people that dissent and are raising these concerns as hijacking.
Is MoveOn.org writing the bills?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. The bills are written in committees, and if you understand the procedures by which committees write bills, they go through extensive markup, they hold hearings on the bills, and the like. In regard to the comment that about the fact that the comment that these meetings are not being hijacked, it would be one thing if those in opposition would come in and talk about features of the bill in that they disagree with that are actual truthful characterizations of what's in the bill. When people come into these meetings and talk about this Nazi plan or the idea that we're all going to become communist as a result of this, it clearly reveals a misunderstanding about what is in the bill. This is the problem. It isn't as though they come in with some effort to find out what's actually in the bill. It isn't as if they come in and really have some basis upon of knowledge upon which to argue about components of the bill. They mischaracterize the bill in outrageous ways, and they do it screaming and shouting at people. And that's what I say by hijacking.
Thanks for the call, Tim. Let's go next to Ron from La Crosse. Hi, Ron.
Yes, I'd like to make a comment about that, too. I suspect that a lot of the people are disrupting those town hall meetings. They might be getting cash under the table from the insurance companies or somebody acting as a surrogate on behalf of the insurance.
I'm not sure about that. But
well, it seems a little far-fetched. My other comment is about Dick Cheney. I think both Bush and Cheney should have been impeached for abandoning our men, our soldiers in Afghanistan. I think that was a disgrace. They put Afghanistan on the back burner simply because it didn't have oil and Iraq did. The CIA said that Saddam Hussein didn't have any weapons, nuclear weapons of mass destruction. I don't know about chemical or biological, but I think the oil was the prime motive for going into Iraq. And I think Cheney was a co-president, not just vice president.
Professor.
Well, I certainly think Dick Cheney was very instrumental in the policies of the Bush administration, particularly the foreign policy area. I would say that, you know, in terms of the Afghanistan situation, I think clearly it is something that we took we sort of went into Afghanistan first and then took our eye off the ball there and diverted all of our attention to Iraq and left Afghanistan as sort of a poor stepchild to what we were doing. And I think we're seeing the results of that poor planning as we went in, the sort of abandonment of what we were doing there, and now we're in this untenable situation currently.
And thanks very much for your call, 800-486-8655. Our line's been crowded, but I do want to remind you that you can use this internet, which is talk@WPR.org, talk@WPR.org. Gay is next from Whitewater. Hi, Gay.
Yeah, hi. I have a suggestion, and I happen to agree with the people who believe that those town hall meetings have been hijacked. I don't think they really are town hall meetings at all. They look more like a Jerry Springer show at the end. And I think the suggestion might be something that probably no one's going to do, but might make some sense, and that is to discourage the sort of sensationalism on both sides and the outright misinformed, you know, ranting. We might only have them on radio so that people don't get their 5 minutes of, you know, notoriety for craziness. And, you know, histrionics and have to settle down and present in words alone their point of view. I mean, I think they're a good idea, but I think they have not been working as town hall meetings because they have been completely manipulated in a number of ways. So maybe not televising them would bring a little bit more civility because I think people have to think a little bit more before they call on the radio and know that they can't be seen. Only their words can be heard and judged.
Radio, the most civil of mediums, yeah. Right, Professor Waller?
Indeed. Yeah, I agree with the caller that the one of the things that's really been missing in the current discussion of healthcare on the part of the public is understanding what we're talking about. Now, admittedly, here there's a lot of stuff that's very difficult, and it's a kind of a thorny thing to get your head around. But really, in order to understand that, you've got to familiarize yourself with what is actually in the legislation and what some of the terms are and what they mean, because otherwise they lend themselves to being mischaracterized in the way that we've seen revealed with this kind of inflamed rhetoric.
And thank you so much for your call. Let's go next to Janie from Two Rivers. Hi, Janie.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to let all of the people know that were listening that I attended a Steve Kagan rally in Green Bay, and there was 450 people there. It was wonderful. He bullet point all of the information that we need to know, and the only thing that the media picked up on was about the 10 or 20 people that were against health care.
Right. I think the press is to blame for some of this, too. That's what you're seeing on nightly news. You're seeing all these outrageous comments because it makes people watch, or I don't know what it is, but that's been a good chunk of the coverage.
Indeed, you're right. I mean, the sensational is what makes the news. You know, a reasoned debate is not newsworthy, but disruption and chaos is newsworthy. And I think you're entirely correct that sometimes gives people the sense that that everything is sort of a madhouse.
Yeah.
I encourage everyone to go to a town hall meeting or a rally just to see for themselves who is really for this, because there are 46 million Americans without health insurance. This needs to be taken care of. We need to take care of each other as a community. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Janie, for your call. We go next to Mark from Manitowoc. Hi, Mark.
Hi. Good morning. And I have a. I'm a rare breed. I'm a educated, affluent conservative, actually. And my concern is this. And I have a comment and a and a question for the professor. I noticed this healthcare debate raised an interesting issue for me. I am a Republican, but when I look around and I look at the people representing the party, attending the meeting, carrying on, not being rational, being illogical, it began with the election itself and carried forward. And the Republican Party itself has changed for me. I'm literally a man without a party. Yes, I have conservative views. Yes, but I'm not a crazy. I'm not illogical. And I'm wondering from the professor, have you noticed a change in the direction of the Republican Party? And what's the future for the Republican Party?
Well, I think you have a lot of company, because I think there's a lot of conservatives out there, Republicans out there, who feel as though their party has been sort of taken over by this sort of right-wing illogical element. And I think, unfortunately for the Republican Party, there aren't many voices that are speaking up to that and, you know, and sort of calling attention to that. You know, you've got Rush Limbaugh, you've got Sarah Palin, and you've got others who are attempting to speak for the party who are sort of part of that inflamed rhetoric on that side. And I don't know. I think the Republican Party is really in search of an identity, and I don't know whether they're going to be able to find it in time to rescue their fortunes. I think what many are doing is just hoping that the way for the Republican Party to revive itself is to see failure from the Obama administration or the Democrats on a major piece of legislation like health care. I think there are a lot of Republicans out there, good conservative Republicans, who are sort of on board with this idea, not putting forward their own ideas, but instead just hoping that perhaps this healthcare thing goes down in flames.
And on that note, we have to say goodbye. Professor Waller, thank you so much for being with us this hour. We'll talk to you again soon.
You bet.
Thanks. Professor George Waller, Assistant Professor, University of Wisconsin, Fox Valley. He's in political science. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning and to Rob Schroeder. Rhonda for producing, Rob for on-air production of this hour.